Let's make it happen, Captain.
All right. From deep inside Death Star, welcome to Defrag. I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
And we're going to get started today. Got a short show, lots of places to be, lots of things to do. First show mail, in the recent show you suggested that having a hard drive showing up as an internal was risky to remove when it didn't have an eject in Windows. I believe you recommended eject, power down, remove the drive, which you did. This isn't entirely true. What? For hard drives that are in docks that display as internal drives instead of external, you can use the disk manager to offline the drive. This essentially flushes the drive cache and is similar to ejecting a drive except for it's for drives that appear as internal. Yeah, that's a good point. You could do that.
You can absolutely do that. You know, SATA itself is designed to be hot swappable. You know, if you have docks, you're probably using a SATA dock nowadays anyways. And yes, it's absolutely true. You can offline the disk. You can eject the disk. Make sure that it stops spinning.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, always safe to go the safest route, of course, and, you know, power down first.
Yes.
You know, or well, offline it, then power it down, and you know, do all that fun stuff.
Now, of course, my original problem that is, I don't like to take the time to even go into the sys tray and eject a drive. So waiting for a disk manager is going to be.
You could script it through disk part.
Yeah.
So if you ran disk part, which is kind of like running disk manager, you can pass it a script file that'll select the disk, select the volume, offline it. And away you go. So it's just a single double click on the desktop if you wanted to do that.
Nice. Okay, that's a good option. All right, next piece of viewer feedback. At my office, oh wow, this sounds familiar. At my office, we have a habit of pranking people who leave their workstations unlocked. So I'm diligent at locking my workstation anytime I leave. However, when I try to shut down or restart, I get a list of closing tasks, which can persist for several minutes depending on what I had running. Is there a way to make this faster and not have to wait? First of all, just judging from this email and considering that it came from a Hotmail account, I wonder if they are in Nick Fillingham's department because he was legend for that.
You for do pranking not, or leaving his workstation unlocked?
For if you walk away from a machine and you've not locked it, you can just expect that he sent an email to Ballmer.
So, that would not be a good thing to pull nowadays.
So, this was from Yakko Warner, a.k.a. DJ, a.k.a. Yakko Warner. What say Gove?
First off, love the Animaniacs reference.
Yeah.
I love that cartoon. Today watched this cartoon. Well, not actually today, but to this day I watched this cartoon.
Yeah.
My nieces and nephews love that.
Nice.
So, good name.
So, for shutdown. First thing came to mind.
Yeah, so if you're shutting down the machine and you want to just walk away and kind of guarantee that it's there, there's not a lot of guarantees because we try and preserve data for you.
What exactly is going on when it's sitting there? Because I'm pretty good about at least, you know, shutting down Outlook and stuff like that, but sometimes I still see this message. What's caused this and what's happening behind the scenes?
So behind the scenes, the
defrag it for me.
Defrag it. So when you have processes running, applications running, the OS is trying to give them the information that's required in order to save their data. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's getting a shutdown message. The Windows is shutting down. But if you have stuff running, you don't necessarily just want their processes killed because you might lose data.
Yeah.
So the operating system is doing its best effort to say, hey, hold on, you know, pause a little bit, save your state, tell us when you're ready, and then, you know.
Give this guy a second. And usually it's pretty quick. You know, you wait a few seconds and boom, it's gone. You hear the ding, ding.
Right.
It shuts down.
So the part of the problem was back pre-Vista, so XP2K, we kind of gave real latitude to the applications.
Mm-hmm.
So what they were able to do was veto the shutdown.
Hmm.
So what they could do is say, no, I don't want you to shut down. And then people would really, you know, they'd shut down the machine, they'd walk away, they'd come back the next day and it's still sitting there because the application said abort the shutdown. So not a great stance. So in Vista and in Win7, we kind of approved upon that and said, okay, we're going to attempt to give the apps time, but we're ultimately in control. The OS is in control, so we're going to shut down the OS forcefully after giving it some time. Unfortunately, by giving it some time and by the user walking away and by giving the opportunity for the user to cancel it, the computer, of course, does not know that you've walked away and a new person has come in to cancel the shutdown.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Nick showed up.
It's a double-edged sword, right? So we've given you the opportunity to cancel the shutdown, but if a malicious user tries to come by, one of the first rules of security is that if you have a malicious user physical access to the machine,
yeah,
you've already lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. There are a couple of things that you can do, and it's actually kind of comes back to my previous comment about scripting disk part. We have a utility in the OS called shutdown.exe. Mm-hmm. You can script that as well, you know, give it a shortcut with a command line that says forcefully reboot.
Yeah.
You know, don't give the user opportunity to cancel.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll take it down.
Okay. Awesome. All right. There you go. Next question. I'm looking to boot Windows on a jump drive. I want to run some utilities like SSD reformatting that requires Windows to be on a separate drive. Then I'd also like to run some diagnostic tools to repair some computer issues. Do you have any suggestions on doing this? Doesn't matter what version of Windows.
So you'll obviously, if you're running a Windows 7 system with the latest version of NTFS,
yeah,
you want to match the OS.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you can't boot a full version of Windows from a jump drive, from a USB stick. There are other versions, however, that you can. There's Windows Embedded. You have to get a specific license for that one. You can download it if you have an MSDN account, though, and play around with that, which is kind of cool. Same thing with Windows PE. This is a pre-install environment that we give to OEMs. Similar thing. You can boot off a CD. You can boot off a jump drive. Perfect place for that one is going to have utilities on it.
Yeah.
There are many utilities that will work just from WinPE. You can throw on additional dependencies if it needs it, but you know, you'll get to a point where some things just won't work in PE. For example, if you're using a 64-bit version of PE, it doesn't come with WoW 64, so you can't run 32-bit processes. In PE, you can only run either 64-bit processes or a 32-bit version of PE and only 32-bit processes. So you have a couple of limitations there, unfortunately. But if you go to like portableapps.com, I mean, I've got a version of this myself, a PE version, and there's a lot of things that you can throw on there that works as a portable version.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
And you carry one around, don't you?
I do carry one around. What I like is my version will have terminal services on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just remote desktop into something else.
Nice.
Right from there. It's a nice thin client.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Next question. I often use Windows key L to lock my machine in Windows 7. However, one issue I ran into is that the Windows key gets stuck on the password screen, acts like it's pressed. So when typing the password, if your password has a P in it, it brings up the multi-monitor options. This only happens on my non-domain connected machines. If I need to press Control-Alt-Delete to log in, the problem does not happen. The solution is to just tap the Windows key to reset the stuck key. Well, it's nice that they include their own solution.
They did. And what's kind of funny is we had a discussion back and forth because it triggered a memory that I've got.
Yeah.
We've hit this internally. It's terminal services. It manifests more as you do remote desktop into other machines. And yes, the solution is currently to tap the Win key to get out of it.
Yeah.
But it's a problem that we're actively addressing.
Okay, so we're working on that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Next question. I've noticed an odd issue lately with my Dell Inspiron 6400 laptop running Windows 7. When putting the laptop into sleep mode and then re-waking it sometimes later, my USB mouse attached keeps disconnecting and then reconnecting. I also hear the USB attach and unattach sounds. This could be anywhere between a few seconds and a few minutes before it reconnects. Do you have any idea what's happening?
I've seen this particular
problem.
And by
the way, they said I love the show. Learning so much more. Thank you. I should have put your question first.
I've seen this problem happen on various machines coming back from sleep.
Yeah.
Usually what it is the USB driver or some other drivers associated with the system that's getting a notification of the awakening.
Yeah.
Is just having a hard time processing that request. Another potential issue is that there's a lower filter or an upper filter on the USB stack, so some other software that you installed, that's reinitializing the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I would check to see, you know, what else you have installed. Does it actually happen on a clean system? Can you update the BIOS?
Would it help to plug that device into, like, just in the main board instead of going through a hub, or does it not make a difference?
It may or may not.
Yeah.
You know, if you have, say, like, multiple USB ports, you might try a different controller, because oftentimes if you have some ports on one side, some on the other, they might actually be connected to two different controllers.
Yeah, and I've got like the main board connections, and I got USB 3 in the back too. So mm-hmm. sometimes plugging in a USB 3 does different things depending on what my problem is.
Well, USB 3 on Win 7 is interesting because it doesn't use a Windows stack. it has to use a third party site because we don't have it built in.
That's true, yeah.
So anything is possible when you have third party stacks involved, depending on what version that they've got. So if that's the particular issue, if you're on USB 3, you'd also look for an update to that USB 3 stack.
Cool. Thank you, Terry. All right. Next question. How do I boot my Windows 7 partition to safe mode if it's installed on boot camp? On normal PC computers, you normally see the BIOS getting started and prompt you to press something, normally F8, to enter different boot methods. However, on my Mac's boot camp, there's no text saying any such thing, and it goes directly into Windows 7 loading screen. So I can tell you what this is, because I had a MacBook Pro before, and I'm pretty sure that the problem
Sacrilege.
Is... I know, but I inherited it, so...
No, it's good hardware.
Yeah. So the problem was there's a function key to make the function keys work, because normally the function keys do things like, you know, the keyboard brightness and stuff like that.
Oh, yes, it's a dual function key.
Yeah, so when you're booting up, you still hit the F8 key, but you want to hit the function key and then the F8 key to get that to work. So that's something that you want to give that a try. Next question. I'm trying to highlight text within an image in OneNote 2010. It works all right, but if I need to highlight a whole line, it tends to take a few tries, and it comes out sloppy looking. Is there a way to freeze the vertical axis so I just highlight a straight line and make it look very good? Holding shift doesn't seem to work. It would make sense that holding shift might lock to an axis like that. I know what they're talking about. I have the same problem in the snipping tool.
I think this is just an inherent issue.
But
there are some things that you could do, like on not this particular trackpad, but on my trackpad at home for the Synaptics driver.
Yeah,
you can actually hold down a specific key and it will lock the axis on the trackpad.
Nice.
So you could that is one method. It's more of an all-encompassing thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can tell
If you don't have it, it's not going to help you. But yeah, here's your test here.
It doesn't work all that well. Here's a real hardware solution for it. Take a book.
That was going to be my solution.
Run your mouse along the book.
Yeah, on the snipping tool, I have a ruler on my desk and my little thing of pens, my cup full of pens. And I take the ruler out and I put my mouse on it and zzz,
there
like
you
that.
Go.
So that's a snipping tool. But in OneNote, there is a way to do this on text.
Yeah, I found this method. You can highlight your text, right-click on it, choose the highlighting... what's the funky? Orange.
There you go. Channel 9 orange. Nice. All right. So there's one way you can do that, and that'll.
And this was a picture, and you know normally it doesn't highlight very well, but under this draw, you can get a highlighter and highlight on a picture.
Yeah, nice. One of the things I learned from Dan Fernandez, too, for highlighting things in a picture, because he uses a snipping tool, and then he'll put a red box around it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how are you doing that? I don't see that in the snipping tool. But what he does is he brings the snip into an email, an Outlook, and then he goes into Insert and Shapes, and there's a place where you can draw a box around something, and he selects no fill, and for the outline, a red outline, and it does a real nice box around it. So that's another option, too, if you need to get something around a picture.
Or
then you just snip it again or something. Yeah, you could do that, too. But I always have email open anyway, so good solution. All right, next question. Sometimes Flash videos are freezing when I try to play them on a computer. I've reinstalled Flash and the video drivers, but sometimes it locks up the entire browser. Any suggestions? I also had this problem a long time ago, though, and hopefully there's an update so that if you get the latest video drivers and you get the latest Flash, and you should be okay. But it was just on videos, too. Mm-hmm. And so the way that I got around this, and I found out that it was related to hardware acceleration. So you want to try turning off hardware acceleration.
And you do now, that over here under Internet Options Advanced. You have this check mark for use software rendering instead of GPU rendering.
Now, is that everything or is that...
That's just IE.
Just IE.
Yeah.
So the way that I was doing is I right-click on a Flash movie, and there's an option for it in its settings. But I just couldn't figure out how to do it because every time I go to a video and try to right-click it, it already have locked up. So what I did is I just went to a site that had an ad on it, and it was a Flash ad, and I right-clicked on that because it wasn't video playing, and then I turned off hardware acceleration. I was good from then on. So
wow, the single good use of a Flash ad.
All right, next question. Sometimes, I don't know what I'm doing here. When I grab an application in the Windows bar and drag it around, the other windows minimize the taskbar. How did I do this? What's this called, and how do I disable this feature? It's called Arrow Shake.
I just think I just did it, didn't I?
Yeah.
You grab it. Shake
there you
it.
Go. And you can shake again, and it comes back as well. You have to actually grab it. It's tough on a trackpad. Yeah,
there
it came
is.
Back. So, yeah, it's called Aero Shake, and there is a way to turn it off.
There is. The wonderful GP Edit. It's a group policy that you can use. The way I always find group policies, because there are literally thousands of them.
Yeah.
Go to All Settings, choose Filter Options. I knew the name of it. It was called Aero Shake.
Yeah.
So I searched for the name Aero, hit OK. It filters on that. And there it is. Turn off Aero Shake for minimizing mouse dusters and just say enabled and then reboot the system.
Yeah.
And then you're good to go. No more shaking.
There you go. That should help out.
I'm sure there are some folks out there that, I mean, it's pretty disconcerting, right? You're just kind of moving a window along, and you just happen to move in a way that we think is a shake, but to you is not.
Yeah.
And suddenly all your windows are gone.
Well, you know, sometimes I'm just moving windows out of the way so that I can see, like, you know, a number or something that I'm trying to write down. And so I've seen where it does it. It doesn't bother me. I just shake it again, and it comes right back. But, you know, if that bothers you that much, options, baby. Turn it off. There you go. All right, next question. When I right-click anywhere, I get an option for file new for a specific extension. I'd like to add some custom files into this menu so I can create my own, like PHP. How can I do this? This is like, you know, you're in a directory and you right-click new.
Or just on my desktop.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You can add new, you know, Word document, text document. Saves you a little bit of time. Open up the application because it'll, you know, even prompt you for the file name right away.
Right.
So how would you add a new one in here?
We have a KB article on it, how to add an object to the new object list.
There you have it.
It is KB article 140333.
There you go.
Just do a Bing search on that.
And how tough is this one?
It's a registry hack.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to call it a hack. It's completely supported.
It's a registry entry.
You just can add a new file name, type.
Yeah,
often an existing extension that's been enabled. Then away you go. You could do it for, you know, a Photoshop file or what are folks creating?
What are the kids doing today?
You know.
I don't know. Whatever, man. All right. Next question. I need to merge two folders together that will contain files of some of the same files and some new files. What's the best way to do this? You know, I do this quite a bit when I'm merging. Two directories, like I'll back up the pictures that are on my phone, and then sometimes I leave my pictures there, and I have another directory that they're already backed up. When I copy them over, it's the same. Sometimes they're new, and it's just started renaming, like on one of my cameras, because, you know, you take the battery out, it starts back at image IMG 0000 again, and so sometimes they're the same. So the first thing is, you know, you want to know if they're the same or not, and usually when you drag the entire directory and copy it over, it'll tell you, you know, hey, there's two files, and I just look at the size and the date, and if they're the same, then, you know, I'll usually just overwrite everything. Mm-hmm. Also has an option there where you can say, you know, I want to keep both versions because, you know, they're two different files and I want to keep all my pictures. And sometimes I do that if I just don't know. So you can click that and it'll just rename the second or third ones if that's the case. Gives it, like, you know, the same name with two in parentheses. Any other advice on that one?
If they're two different folders, what I do is I just rename one of them to be the same name as the destination folder.
Mm-hmm.
Just drag it right on top, and then it'll say, would you like to merge?
There you go. All right.
That's a fast way, or else I'd go to the command line and go to the directory in which all those files were and just do an xcopy **.
Yeah.
To the destination. And it'll just skip all, like, it'll tell me what do you want to do? Do you want to overwrite or not?
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll, you know, won't overwrite. Xcopy does not do the, you know, leave both and add an extension or add a copy two or copy one.
Yeah.
But yeah, the shell will do it for you.
Okay, awesome. Next question. We've activated UAC to administrators and standard users, but we've noticed that standard users could not share folders in Windows 7 because this task needs elevation to administration privileges. So this means that a standard user needs an administrator account in order to share folders. Is that correct?
Yep.
That is by design. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. I'm running Visual Studio 2000, 8 in Windows 7 64-bit, and I'm logged in as admin, and I'm running in as an admin, but the program I'm working on fails with access denied when I call a restricted API. If I run the program from Explorer with run as administrator, it works. Mm-hmm. I was under the belief that Windows or Visual Studio 2008 debugs programs from whatever rights Visual Studio 2008 itself is running with. As it stands, I can't debug my application due to this, and I'm at a loss what's going on.
So the Visual Studio debugging is actually rather complex on how they chain the process and how they instantiate the child process and attach the debugger to it. It's very different from, say, using WinDBG.
Yeah.
WinDBG, if you start it elevated and then you start the process, yes, everything will be elevated and running normally.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a dev on the system, you might be better off simply turning off UAC if you actually need to run and debug it elevated.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what I'd try and do is actually just have a standard elevation call in your application, have it elevate first, and then when the debugger attacks, it should also be elevated because VS is elevated. That would be another method.
All right, there you go. All right, and so that's the questions for this week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. This is your pick of the week. What do you got here?
I came across an article surfing online about something called the Nest. Now, I don't know about
you. It was hard to miss this one this week. Everyone's talking about it.
Is everybody talking about it?
Yeah.
It's a thermostat. I mean, you wouldn't think of something so boring in your house as a thermostat, but I've got one. It's programmable, but it's non-intuitive. Like, there's a bunch of buttons on there. Nothing ever really makes sense. Like, they have labels, but they don't actually describe the thing that they're doing. So you tend to just say, you know, force a temperature, and then you just use up and down arrows and lock a temperature. And so you're not actually using any
of
the functionality.
Or you're setting days. You say, you know, I'm gone during the day.
It takes you like half an hour just to set the stupid thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, this device is super cool. Nice and simple, single number. It's just a rotary dial kind of thing. Hooks up over Wi-Fi. It connects to the internet.
And what's the benefit of hooking up over Wi-Fi?
You can control from your computer.
It checks the weather from outside,
right? It checks the weather. It downloads statistics.
Yeah.
I can never say that word.
Yeah.
You can control it from your computer. You can program it from your computer. You can connect to it, like, say, if you're on vacation, you can connect to it and, you know, turn it down.
If you end up working until 2 in the morning.
If you end up working really late.
Which you did last night. So, yeah, you could do that.
You can do that. And it learns. So if you, say, come home every Monday at 6 o'clock, and you turn it to 72 degrees after being, you know, 65 degrees, right? You do that a couple of times, it'll remember that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll know that, hey, there's a person that comes home at 6 o'clock every Monday, but comes home different times every other day of the
week. Come home sweaty, and they want it cold.
Right.
Make it cold for them.
So it'll learn from you, and you do it a few times, and you don't have to do it anymore. It just sets it up for you.
And it's got a sensor in it, too, so it can detect if there's people around. So that's kind of nice, too.
Yep.
Back-ordered on this, people had ordered from, I think it was Best Buy before the 28th month.
Yeah, it was gone, like, in a flash.
Yeah, so don't know if they just have, you know, low amount of these or what. But, it's an interesting device. You can also control it from some portable devices, and I hope to find Windows Phone 7 as one of those devices soon because that's kind of cool. Awesome. $250, a little steep.
Supposed to save you that money, you know, over time. I mean, especially, I don't know how, you know, I like to keep the house cold by my wife.
Did you replace your own thermostat when you did that?
I've replaced it once already. So the stock one that had when I built the house was really awful. So I replaced it with a better one. But even that one is... That one's a pain, so I want to replace it with this.
You know, I replaced mine when I moved into my house with a touchscreen one. You know, touchscreen sounds a lot fancier than it is, but it's... hammer screen is more like it.
Right.
But one of the things that someone advised me is they were like, shut all the power off before you do a thermostat. There's some things you can screw up if you don't shut everything off. And I don't remember what that was, but there's some advice there, free advice for you. Is shut off all your power before you start doing the thermostat. So.
Well, you certainly don't want to get electrocuted.
No, that's one of the things, yeah.
The nice thing about this device is that one of their support pages, you can go and check to see if your wiring is compatible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a really simple cover. There's an installation guide, how to do it yourself. You can, if you pull off the cover of your existing one, you can match up and see if your wiring is compatible.
Yeah.
And it's really simple.
It certainly looks cool, that's for sure. Awesome. All right, so that's show for this week. If you have any questions, you can send them to us at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave comments in the show notes, and we can get back to you there. But we prefer email so we can get back to you.
Yeah, we like the
back and forth.
Back and forth.
Back and forth troubleshoot. So see you next week.